The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here it comes again, lunch. Will it be the same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
Welcome, everyone, back to Wrestling Omakase. This is my first episode back here in, you know, I mean, it feels like the right thing to say is the good old US of A, but honestly, it's not good. So just back in the unfortunate US of A, let's just say. And, you know, we're here today to talk about one of the shows I went to, the very last show I went to in Japan, actually. DDT Peter Pan, with a returning guest, the very first returning guest in the history of Wrestling Omakase. It is Dylan Justin, who was on episode 3 when we did the Japanese Wrestling Crash Course. Dylan, welcome back to Wrestling Omakase.
John, thank you. It's an honor to be here, John.
And we don't have to go through your life history again. Did we do that last time? Was that one of the episodes where I forgot to do it? Okay, we did do it. Okay. Oh, yeah, because I remember Drew told a long story about, like, his grandmother or something in WCW.
Yeah.
So, okay. There was one episode where I forgot to do it. I think it was the episode with Jesse and Brennan for Big Japan. Yeah. I think I totally forgot to do it with them. But, yeah. So I'm back here in the US of A, everybody. You may have noticed that I called the Live from Japan thing Volume 1, and there was no Volume 2. So basically, we were planning to do another Live from Japan episode right after Peter Pan on Sunday. The problem was Peter Pan was so fucking long that by the time we got out of Ryugoku, like, it was literally like 8:15 when I thought the show would be over by like 7. But like, so we're outside of Ryugoku at like 8:15, and just nobody wanted to go back to the hotel and do it at that point. You know, I think Mort had to be up at like 6 a.m. for his flight that next morning, and you know, people just wanted to go and relax and enjoy their last night in Tokyo. No one wanted to record a fucking podcast. So DDT Peter Pan being very long is unfortunately what robbed you of a Volume 2. We would have discussed Peter Pan and the other two shows I went to that week, which were a Dragon Gate house show in Daito City, which is, it was a really fun show, actually. Like, if you were ever wondering, like, so that had Shingo and Benkei one-on-one.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a pretty cool little match. And then the, oh God, I have to look up the card because everything blends together after 15 shows. I believe the semi-main was definitely Ryosuke against somebody, but I don't remember what the exact team was. I think it was KZ and Hulk. But I'm going to look this up now because I'm curious. But it was Yamato and KZ. Okay. So that was the semi-main, which is Yamato pinned Saito in about 16 minutes. And the main event was an 8-man tag, which was Dori, Yoshino, Shimizu, and Kotoka defeating Dragon Kid, Eita, Yamamura, and Ishida. So it's only like a 5-match show. It was just very interesting to see a Dragon Gate house show. Like, if you're wondering like what the effort level is, basically like the first 3 matches were felt very much like house show matches. Like, it felt like they were in, you know, kind of like a first gear. But the semi-main, the main, like, that could have been an Eddie Corkin show, honestly. So even this untelevised house show, they do really try hard in the last two matches at least. So
yeah, that does sound like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was about 550 people. That's what their announced attendance were. And I think that was probably pretty close to accurate. It was basically like this like auditorium room in this city hall in Daito, which is not a very big city, I don't think. It's like right on the outside of Osaka. We were definitely the only foreigners there. They were not expecting to see foreigners in the middle of Daito City. But
and there were quite a few at Korakuen, though, right?
Yeah, Korakuen had a lot. But Daito City, no, we were the only three foreigners there. But yeah, so that show was really fun, just to briefly talk about that. If you're ever wondering if a Dragon Gate house show is worth it, I thought it was really cool. And that's just to see a Dragon Gate show that no one else will ever see, except the 500 or so people there. But yeah, that was cool. And then the other show I went to was Death Mania, which has not aired yet. That will air, I believe, Saturday is when it's going to air on Samurai TV. still getting over my illness too, so if I cough during this show. But yeah, so Big Japan Death Mania, I would definitely recommend checking that out. I'm interested to see what the death match, you know, I don't want to call them experts, like the death match connoisseurs maybe think of that main event, because like live that match was incredible.
Takahashi versus
Takeda.
Okay, yeah, I like Takeda. So that,
yeah, that match was, I mean, it was a really, like, first of all, there were two guys who actually, you know, like they actually wrestled, you know, which is cool. Like a lot of the American deathmatch guys don't wrestle, but these guys, they did plenty of wrestling moves and stuff. So I was into that. And then obviously, you know, they have the ultra violence with the glass and the blood, but there's a good wrestling match under all that. And I mean, I almost put it in my top 10 matches of the year. Like I put it just outside my top 10. It was a real experience live. So I don't know
Takeda's a really good wrestler. Just
yeah, he came off like that. He came off like that live. Like he wrestled his ass off. So yeah. I'm really excited to see what people react to it when they see the recording. I really like Tadeki and Daichi too. That was like I give that like probably like 4 stars. It was a really good match, and it kind of continued the Suzuki story with Hashimoto. He definitely was like the first guy who didn't let Suzuki wrestle his own kind of match and kind of took it to him. So that was really cool too. And, you know, Suzuki kind of almost felt like he got lucky getting a couple moves at the end and catching him and managing to win. But it was a very different kind of match than most of Suzuki's matches so far. So I'm interested to see the reaction to that one. And it was very weird seeing Kenzo Suzuki in a serious match in 2017, because he didn't have like the over-the-top intro. And he just played the match, the tag match. It was him and Sekimoto against Okabayashi and Kamatani. He just played that match completely straight. Like, just no comedy at all. Just wrestled completely normal.
Which is very, Kenzo?
Yeah, Kenzo. It was very weird. It was very weird seeing him. Like, when's the last time you've seen Kenzo Suzuki wrestle a serious match?
Completely I couldn't serious. Tell you because I skip them all.
It's really a difficult call. But yeah, that match is fun too. And there was a lot. They did a lot more Sekimoto versus Okabayashi than I was expecting. So that was really cool to see live. But yeah, so definitely check out Death Mania when that makes tape. I'm sure most of the people listening to this probably will anyway. But it seemed like a really cool show live, especially the top end matches. So I'll be interested to see what people think about it. But the main reason why we're here today is a show that people actually have seen, which is the DDT Peter Pan. What was the entire thing? DDT Peter, Ryugoku Peter Pan 2017. Peter Pan, even if you become 20 years old, Peter Pan. I love DDT show names. They're the greatest. But yeah, so Dylan obviously has seen this show. I'm sure a lot of you have by now on DDT. It's available on DDT Universe. And Dylan wrote an excellent review for the Voice of Wrestling website. And I'll be interested to see. I have not watched it back on tape yet, so all of my thoughts are just based on attending it live. So I'll be interested to compare my live thoughts and Dylan's on tape thoughts is my general idea with this episode. So you saw the entire show, right? Yeah, because I read your review. So you saw everything. You saw more of the show than I did because when I was like finding my seat, that Street Pro Wrestling Extra Edition, the Gota Ihashi 5-match series, that started already basically while I was still finding my seat. So you've seen slightly more.
That was a good time.
You gave that one 5 stars. I mean, you're not usually one for the DT comedy, but you seem to really enjoy that one.
Yeah, someone on Twitter, he's like, hey, why haven't you added this match to your match of the year spreadsheet? And I think he was dead serious. I'm like, it's a joke, man. But yeah, that was a great match. I really enjoyed myself while watching that one.
I mean, Gota Ihashi's one of the better comedy wrestlers on the planet, I think. And whenever he shows up, it's always a good time. I mean, his cameo during the Suzuki and Sasaki match, like that was, or Suzuki and Takagi match, that was really, really funny. Remember when he just kept rolling down the stairs? He's getting kicked by Minoru Suzuki down the stairs. That was hilarious. And then when the DDT Shinjuku face show I went to, he had some funny run-ins because he did it was the last night of Beer Garden. And he, first of all, failed to get rid of his King of Dark title. And then he ended up making, his latest entry in for the best unit in the general election, which is what, Picking 2K17, I think it's called. It's called Picking every year, right? Isn't that how it works?
I think so, yeah. It's some very Japanese, poorly translated.
I think it's pegging. I could be wrong. Somebody can get mad at me that I don't know this, but I'm pretty sure it's pegging. But yeah, so I saw the formation of Pegging 2K17, where it didn't look like they were going to be able to get they were not going to be able to convince Shimatani this time because he was going to go with the DNA unit that they formed, but they told him, look, you could be the leader this time. And that was enough to convince him. So they managed to get their third member for Picking 2K17. I'm sure they're going to lose the vote again, have to split up, but I mean, it's a shoot vote. So it's kind of funny. They lose it every year, but I guess the fans are in on the joke basically, and they don't vote for it. But because I saw like a couple people at the show got ballots because if you buy merchandise, they were handing out ballots already. So
yeah, I heard Taylor.
Taylor
voted for something. I don't remember what he said.
I think he voted Damnation and what was the other unit he voted for? He voted for Damnation and one other unit. I don't remember what it was.
All Out maybe.
But I don't think it was All Out. I think it was something. No. I think it was one of the weirder ones, but. But yeah, he voted for two units, and because he got two votes, because they encourage ballot stuffing. Like basically, you get ballots for buying merch. It's basically how it works. And now at this point, unfortunately, I had done my merch buying for DET when I went to Shinjuku Face, the very start of the trip, which was my very first wrestling show the entire trip. And just at this point, I did not have the money to spend on more merch just to get a vote, but. Yeah, I'm very broke right now, folks. It is expensive going to Japan, but so like the vote is a shoot. So go to Ihashi. We'll see it. Maybe him and Pigging or whatever the hell his unit's called can pull it out this time. But yeah, so the 5-match series, just to go over real quick. First of all, he defeated Dai Suzuki with a body press in 36 seconds. This is the one I did not see. I was finding my seat while that was going on, but. That meant that Dai Suzuki is the new King of Dark champion. So Ihashi, after I think this was his third try, he's finally able to get rid of that cursed title. Good for him. It's a good choice, I think, Dai Suzuki.
He deserves a spot on the main cards. He's very over too. I mean, it's a joke that he's in the dark matches, but he is over enough to be on the main cards, I think.
Yeah, the crowd loves him. The second one, he defeated Gorgeous Matsuno with a body press in 3.5 minutes. I saw a little bit of this. Like, I think this was still going on while I was finding my seat, but, it was, just again, this is all backstage or like not backstage, but like on the entryway, basically, I think is where it was taking place in like the hallways. So I was already out of the hallways by the time this was going on, but I was just kind of like slowly making my way down to ringside. I had awesome seats for the show. If you didn't see my pictures on Twitter, basically like fourth row, off to one side, a little bit diagonal, so I couldn't see everything perfectly, but still fourth row, you know, it was pretty good.
Yeah. How does that compare to where you sat in the at the New Japan shows?
So I also sat fourth row for the first night at New Japan, but that was probably my favorite seat the entire trip because we were like right next to the entryway, or one of the two entryways, so the wrestlers would walk right past us, which, you know, was really cool, and included, you know, Tama Tonga punking me on live television. But that was night one. And then night two, we had third row, but we had, like, dead center third row. So that was, like, the best seat for us actually seeing the in-ring action. Like, that one, I was, like, right on top of it. So I'd say the New Japan tickets are better, but the DT was still very good. And then night three, I had second floor, so that was not nearly as good. But yeah, I mean, I had ringside a lot at this trip. I had front row for Stardom at Kurikan, which was awesome. We had like, oh, you saw the show?
Yeah, it was really good.
We made tape, right? I'm pretty sure a bunch of times.
I think you did.
Someone else on Twitter was telling me I was on TV, but but yeah, so that's Stardom, and then I had I think I had like fifth row for the Dragon Gate House show. Not the Kurikan. The Kurikan, we were in the orange seats. But the house show, we had like fifth row. And then for Death Mania, I had third row. And that was also very good. But with the glass, it was like, okay, this is actually incredibly frightening because this glass is flying, you know, directly in front of you.
Right.
But yeah, I think that was all the ringside I had. But yeah, the tickets were not cheap. I would say like Mort worked it out. And Mort worked out that he spent about like over $1,000 just on tickets. I don't think I spent quite that high because I didn't go to quite as many shows as he did, but I probably spent like 800 or something just on tickets.
That's insane.
Yeah. You know, I mean the DET alone was like 1300 yen. So like, like over $100. And then the New Japan was, you know, about 10,000 yen, which is like $90 for the first two nights. The Stardom too, I think, was like 12,000 yen. So basically, ringside will set you back like $100, or front row. The Big Japan ringside was only like for third row was only like 7,800 yen. So that was a little cheaper.
But yeah, but that was a smaller. Well, no, it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nagoya is not as expensive probably, instead of Tokyo, but yeah, I mean, you know, tickets will add up, folks. That's all I'm gonna say. And the one thing that helped too is I was able to buy the New Japan tickets. Like the New Japan tickets for those three shows, that I had to buy way in advance, so that was not an expense for the trip. So that was like $300 probably. That was just for New Japan, but that was like way beforehand. Whereas the rest was all like reserved, and we bought it during the trip. So at least it helped that I was able to, you know, break it up a little bit, but. You know, you could definitely go to all these shows a lot cheaper than I did, but I figured, you know, you spend all this money to fly there and stay there.
You might as well.
You might as well just go crazy, right? So,
right.
So I did. I went kind of crazy. Anyway, Peter Pan. That was we didn't know the dark match, right? So Matt Polly. That was the third one. This is the first one I really actually saw, where I saw Gota like interrupt his autograph session. And then they eventually fought into the arena finally. At this point, you know, just kind of looking up, you could see them. You know, I was like probably, I was on one side of the ring, and they were coming down to, like, I think I would be like east, and they were coming down the south side. So not like directly behind us or anything, but you could see it pretty easily. And then they eventually ended back in the ring, and of course, Mad Polly beat him. After that, Gota kind of found his way backstage, and he got knocked out by Rocky Kawamura. This is probably people probably think the next one's even funnier, but I thought the Rocky one was the funniest.
Yeah,
just putting on these gloves and Rocky punching the shit out of him is pretty funny.
I mean, he legit fucked him up. I mean, if you watch it, he got him pretty good.
Yeah. But that's the Kawamura one. And then the last one, he goes into the women's locker room and finds Lingerie Mudo. Mudo selling his knee was like the funniest thing. That was really hilarious. And then Mudo puts him away with the Shining Wizard. But yeah, this was great. This was fantastic. This is everything I love about the ET, and God bless it. Go to Hashi's awesome, and this was really fun. Okay, so the next match was the, I guess you could call the first real dark match. It was a 8-man tag, Mizuki Watase, Reka, Diego, and Deki Shimamura defeating Tomomitsu Matsunaga, Hoshitango, Nobuhiro Shimatani, and the new boy, Mr. Okada lookalike, Masato Kamino. Watase pinned Kamino with a backdrop in about 6.5 minutes. This is kind of just there. The crowd really wasn't even like in their seats yet either, so there wasn't a lot of people to react to it. I was in my seat, and it was cool, but I mean, it was over pretty quick. It was just a match.
A little sprint, nothing to write home about, but it's the people there. It's something to look at, I guess. And yeah. I'll say Diego, what's his old name?
Guanchulo.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like Venezuelan or something, right? Ecuador, something like that.
I thought it was Chile.
Yeah, he's improved this year. I've never really liked him, but he's ever since joining All Out and changing his name, he's been. I've liked him.
He's the guy that you go through, by the way, if you want to reserve DET tickets. Not that his English is great, but his English is a lot better than I guess most of the other people's English. But he was really cool. I mean, when he climbed up the top rope, like he was pointing around, and I yelled out Diego, and he like looked right at us and like pointed at us and was like, ah, like you made it, basically. Because he puts aside these fucking expensive ass tickets for us. He doesn't really know if we're gonna show up or not. So it was cool of them to do that. They put aside reserved 13,000 yen tickets. We easily could have left him. Let them look like idiots with that, but they did it for us and we showed up, so he seemed happy to see us. We had talked to him during the DNA DET double shot because he put tickets aside for us for that too, the DNA one. So he thought it was cool. He definitely thought it was cool to see a bunch of foreigners coming all the way out for DET, and he asked us to spread the word, which we're clearly doing that right now. So. We thought it was also pretty cool when we said we had a podcast and stuff. So basically I think anyone spreading the word of DET in English, they're pretty happy about. Obviously they know Jamie has the dramatic DET site, which I know they're happy to see that exist.
By the way. Yeah. I use that a lot while writing my
Yeah, for sure. Jamie, yeah. Shout out to Jamie. He was on my last trip last year, the 2016 one. A really great dude. So he was the only one who went to a Japanese baseball game with me, and he had a good time. So shout out to Jamie if he happens to listen to this. The next match was the Iron Man Heavy Metalweight title, the Tokyo Joshi Pro Offer Battle Royal. You end up coming out on top in 1646. You is a badass. I always forget like how much of a badass he is until I see her again. Like she's not quite at the level of like Chihiro Hashimoto in Sendai Girls, but kind of similar build and kind of similar look, and very very cool, very cool wrestler, and I like her a lot.
She had a really good match with Shoko Nakajima in on January 4th, actually. That was a really good match. It's the
I like the match
Joshi Pro match I've seen, actually.
I like the match where she beat Miyu Yamashita for the title. That was really good. But Yamashita is another one I like a lot. She's the pink striker that was the first champion. She's good. A lot of the Tokyo Joshi Pro girls aren't that great, but those two are good. The one who's champion now, is that the one you're talking about, Sayako Nakajima?
Yeah.
Or is that somebody? I think she's the one who's champion.
Yeah.
I think she's so. She's pretty good. The one with the little bell, and I think that's Sayako, but Rika Tatsumi's good. Yeah. So there's some good wrestlers there, but there's also a lot
of
really bad.
Did you see the spot? Well, of course you did, but they did this thing. It's hard to describe, but there's a GIF of it on Twitter if you want to find it. It was like this rolling thing out of the corner. Somebody went for, I think, a power bomb, and then somebody jumped over, and I have no idea how to describe it, but it was very cool. Did you?
Yeah,
you
know I do know what you're talking about. It was really cool. It was like that sunset flip, jackknife pin combo kind of thing.
Yes. Yes.
Because then the pinning Rika. I think that's how Rika Tatsumi got eliminated. So.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Just still got the cough going. But yeah, so that was a really this was a fun match. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean nothing wrong with it at all. So that was the last of the dark matches, and we hit the opening, and we go to the real start, which begins with the Yuki Ino debut match. Naomi Yoshimura and Yuki Ueno defeating Koki Iwazaki and Yuki Ino. Yoshimura pinned Ino with the Shonenba in about 10:49. This is a very good opener, I thought. I mean, Ino stood out for obvious reasons. A big dude, but he looked good in there. Other than the fact that he messed up the finish, what are you gonna do? It's his first match. You know, he's allowed to make a mistake. It's just too bad it was the finish. But before that, though, he looked really good. And you know, Yoshimura is awesome. Like already, Yoshimura is really he's got like such great heel presence, and you know, he's obviously the next big. The next big dude they're building up to move up like Higuchi did, but you know he's just such a different kind of dude than Higuchi, and he's already got that great.
He has a very Shingo kind of look. Like he's always smiling, and he looks like a complete asshole. But the thing is, too, I think he could be a good babyface as well because he does have like a baby-esque face. He looks like a child. Yeah. So I think he could be a really big face, but he also does have that Shingo, Shingo facial expressions that really make for a good heel as well.
Yeah, and like, did you watch the credits? I don't know if you, at the end of the show, like he just kind of like looks at the camera for like half a second, and then just walks away while the other ones are all posing with the sign. It's just he has that like I'm too cool for this shit kind of thing going on basically. So. He's got a great presence already. I think he's going to be a big, big star, I think. So, and he was one of the big stars for the DNA show I went to, which had did you watch that show, the one-day tournament?
I haven't yet.
Yeah, him and Mao were like, and Iwasaki, actually, were like the standouts of that show. And they had some, you know, some really cool matches and definitely worth checking out. But yeah, this is a cool opener, and... You know, I think a lot of guys in this opener are gonna have. I mean, I like Iwasaki a lot. I think he just needs to kind of find a character probably for DET. But if he ends up being like, maybe he just ends up being like the new generation version of like Shuten Doji, where like his character is that he doesn't have a character, and that stands out basically in DET.
Well, for a rookie, he kind of reminds me of Nakajima. That's a very easy comparison.
Yeah.
But he does have a very similar look, even similar gear, and
that green gear.
He's really good. I think he could be a star within a year or two. But the thing is, DDT likes to take their time with these rookies. So he's been a rookie for like how long? Three years.
Yeah,
so it's kind of it's a New Japan thing. The same problem people have with New Japan, certain people. It's that they take a really long time to push people. We saw it with Shibata. Now we're seeing it with Sonata, or we're going to at least. And DDT has a similar thing with their DNA guys. But I do think Iwasaki could be a pretty big star once they do decide to push him, like Higuchi is now.
Yeah. So that was the opener. Very good opener. Match 2, the KOD 10-man tag team titles, the inaugural match. For these Sentai themed titles, the team of Makoto Oishi, Lily Ko, Lady Beard, Super Satsudango Machine, and Ken Oka defeating Toru Washi, Kazuki Hirata, Joey Ryan, Saki Akai, and Yoshihiko. Oka pinning Hirata with the Fire Spear in 10:23. I mean, this was just hilarious start to finish. Beginning with the entrances, when they come out, the Oishi team had like the old school Power Rangers logo and like the opening to the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers as his entrance video. That was awesome. Obviously Hirata coming out and doing his big thing, and so like the Sasadango like PowerPoint was like apparently about like how they were gonna try to distract Hirata with everybody like stomping really loud for his entrance, and then Lily Cole be able to roll him up and get the pin, which they tried, but it didn't end up working. Hirata kicked out. But yeah, I mean, I love this. This is, again, everything I love about DDT. It was a really funny match, and, you know, didn't go on too long. It didn't drag like sometimes the, you know, sometimes the DDT comedy can, like, especially those battle royals, they can drag if they go on too long. But this I thought, it made its point. It was hilarious, and then it got out, basically. So I thought this was awesome.
Yeah, like I talked about in my review, and like you kind of just, like you kind of just touched on, if you like comedy and DDT, if people like you, you're going to enjoy this a lot. I can't say I didn't enjoy it, but it just, I was kind of zoning out, kind of looking at the phone. It didn't have my full attention. I actually had to go back, so just so I had a little something to say about it in my review. But it was harmless. It wasn't, there was nothing wrong with it. Again, it was very short. It was it didn't overstay its welcome. It was only like 8-10 minutes. So that's good. Usually, or not usually, but sometimes these matches can go too long, overstay their welcome, like Joey Ryan versus Dino did at Judgment. But then again, I understand why that got so much time. But yeah, this was a match. I'm happy for Ken Oka winning a title in DDT. I'm a big fan of his.
I am too. I love Ken Oka. So did you see the rules they announced for these titles, by the way?
I didn't, no.
So they announced basically...
I didn't even know of them.
They said basically that after the show, they acknowledged it'd be hard to get the entire team together. So basically they're going to let as long as three members are present, they can have two people fill in, and it will still count as a defense for the original team. So there you go. Basically how these titles are going to work.
It's a very DDT thing.
It
was a very DDT match and very DDT titles. You know, where else are you going to see?
So. I know. It was great, but I have to say, in the building, Lily Co is extremely over. Ken Oka, people, even doing like the bad communication, singing and dancing, like after he won, like people were very into it. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously Hirata, incredibly over. Crowd loved him. I have to say, as much as I don't like him, Joey Ryan was very over. You know,
I thought you might have been.
No, I don't like him at all. Honestly, one of the few DET comedy people I don't really like at all. But
yeah, Joey Ray,
Lily Co turning that around on him was really funny, though, I will say. Like her vagina strains doing his penis strain, that was pretty funny. Yeah. So that was match number two. Moving on to match three, the Ikemen versus Idol Handsome Humanity Battle. Jiro Ikemen Kichiro defeated Shunma Katsumata of New Wrestling Idolu with the Ikemen Clutch in 12 minutes. This was really fun, I thought, while it lasted. Obviously, you know, half the fun was the entrances where, you know, getting to see the elaborate New Wrestling Idolu entrance where they came out with these, you know, they were tossing these little balls, basically, which unfortunately I did not catch. One, I almost caught one. One went right off my friend's head, basically. Like, I was sitting next to somebody, and, like, it hit right off his head. I tried to grab it, but, like, it bounced backwards. So, and then the Jiro coming out and doing his – Jiro doing his entrance. Like, first of all, you know, obviously the fake-out thing is always awesome. It's not – this is actually my second time seeing his entrance live. I saw it at Kurikan for Wrestle 1 last year. But, you know, this was on a way bigger scale at Sumo Hall, and he was having so much fun. The crowd was so into it. And then looking at Shunma, I don't know if they shot this enough on TV, but he was getting so fucking pissed waiting for Jiro to get in the fucking ring. Like, every time Jiro would do it, Shunma would, like, turn around, and he would, like, you know, get really angry. And Oishi started flipping off the fucking crowd for chanting for Jiro. Like, he was very angry. So it was really funny. And finally the match got underway. I thought the match itself was really cool too. And Jiro winning with the Ikemen Clutch is cool because they had teased it a few times. You know, they'd gone for it a few times earlier. And then, you know, Shun might even try to do his own version, the Idol Clutch, which I thought was awesome. But obviously the result wasn't really in doubt, since, you know, Wrestle 1 wasn't going to send their number one contender to lose. right before he's about to challenge the main event of the Yokohama show. But I thought this match was really cool.
Yeah, I liked it too. The story there is that both of them were trained by Smash,
by Tajiri.
WNC, right? And the thing is, Shunma left to join DDT. I think he stopped wrestling or continued training or something.
Yeah, before it became WNC, I think.
Right. And Jiro stayed. Yeah. It became WNC. Then it fell apart. He left. He went to Wrestle 1, whatever. I thought that was a really cool story. And I think they played that up pretty well while also playing up the, you know, Ikemen versus Idol thing, which people were into. I was into. And it was a fun little match. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So match 4, the special 4-way tag team match. Kotaro Suzuki and Soma Takao. Soma is now 9-0 at Peter Pan events, everybody. They defeated Kasayashi and Kaisuke Ishii, Yankee 2 Kenju, Izami Kodaka and Yuko Miyamoto, and Mike Bailey and Mao. Soma pinned Mao with the endless waltz in about 10.5 minutes. This was fun. I wasn't really expecting it to be like blow away. This is like the portion of the card that was like, you know, kind of get people on the show and have a good time. Not really like, you know, blow away matches, but for what it was, I thought it was pretty cool. You know, it was cool just seeing Yankee 2 Kenju live. You know, cool seeing some veterans like Kotaro Suzuki and Kasayashi, and just seeing the new Wrestling Idol League performance live. They did before the match with the entire singing and dancing routine is really cool. It's always a lot of fun. So this was a really cool match live. I'm not sure how it came off on tape, but live it was fun.
It came off well. The previous matches were kind of just fun. They were for the crowd coming in, getting them ready for more serious matches down the line. And I thought this match, while not serious, it was more serious than the previous ones, I thought. And it did a good job kind of breaking us away from, you know, the fun undercard and bringing us into more the more serious side of the card. Even though Dino versus Takagi took place afterward, but you know what I mean.
That was his own kind of serious, though. I mean, there was a lot of stakes there.
It was. Yeah, it was serious.
That was almost like a serious comedy match. Well, we'll talk about that, but yeah.
And I thought this was really good. I liked Mao a lot. I've never, I've seen him maybe 2-3 times before because I tend to skip around on DDT shows and I don't watch much DNA anymore, but he really stood out to me here. I thought he hung in there with everyone who he stepped in with.
Yeah, Mao is awesome.
So. Yeah, I really like his look too. He has a very good look. Very attractive. He's a very attractive young man. And I thought I liked Ishii a lot too. And you know this. I don't like Ishii very much. I'm not a big Ishii fan. But he did well here, I thought. And do we know if the winners of this match, in this case Suzuki and Takao?
No, we don't know. Don't know that because the only tag title match announced is the factory match. So.
Okay. Yeah. So this was. I thought it would have worked really good, if they gave them one of those whatever they have, the flags that they give the people who win the anytime anywhere matches.
No, it's like a bracelet. Yeah.
A bracelet. Yeah. That probably would have worked. That would have been cool. Would have heightened the stakes a little bit, I guess. But for what it was, I really liked this. I thought it was a very fun spot fest. Really fun sprint. The spot where they all got in and did that Ricochet Osprey, you know, springboard off the ropes thing. Other people do it too, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that was a fun spot.
The Bailey and Mao double dive. That was really cool.
Right.
I mean, that was like right in front of me. Like basically that was the corner right in front of me. So that was cool.
Yeah. I thought everyone looked good. And especially Mao, I was really impressed with him. And yeah, it was a really good match.
So that was the fourth match. The fifth match was the KOG six-man tag team title. Shuten Doji, Kudo, Yukio Sakaguchi, and Masahiro Takanashi defeating Dick Togo, Yasuo Rano, and Antonio Honda. Kudo pinned Honda with the diving double knee drop in 13:52, the first defense for Shuten Doji. This probably was the weakest match on the show, I thought. I really wasn't into it at all. There was really nothing wrong with it, but you know, there was really no good reason for the Dick Togo team to be getting this title shot. And, you know, it just kind of felt like it was there. there was nothing bad about it, but just it didn't suck me in at all. And you could call Honda getting pinned like 10 miles away. So I don't know. It was okay, but just nothing that exciting.
I think I liked it a little more than you. I mean, I gave it 3.5 stars for
people. Yeah, I would have gotten like 3.25 probably. So, I mean, it was a very good show. This was the weakest match on the show, but this is just there for me.
It was the least consequential, I guess you could say. It was kind of just a mid card match. But I actually liked Dick Togo coming in to team with Urano and Honda, who he's been friends with for a long time, and Togo and Honda obviously had that legendary match in 2011. So I kind of like him coming in to team with his boys. I'm not a huge Honda guy, but I thought he was okay. Sakaguchi and Togo had some nice interactions, and Urano didn't do too much. I don't remember Urano at all in this match.
I don't remember him at all either. Honda, he's one of the few DDT comedy guys I actually don't really care that much about. He's not bad or anything, but like I don't really care that much about Antonio Honda.
Yeah. There were a few spots that he did at the beginning that I didn't really understand what was happening. He kind of started like two sweeting the opposite team, and I had no idea what was happening. He started two sweeting them, and
he's
they
were putting like, up he's out. Putting up a fox. That's what he's doing.
I have no idea what that means.
He always tells a story about a fox. It's like Japanese folktale, and then eventually, like he tries to poke them in the eye with the fox. So.
Okay, it looked to me like he was too sweeting them, and they were passing out from it. I didn't really understand that, and I was like, "What the fuck is happening here?"
It's one of those things that's very Japanese. So
yeah. But I liked the match. I thought it was good.
But yeah, it was okay. I liked it well enough. It's just a lot of other stuff in the show I thought was better. So speaking of better, the final match before intermission was the DDT 20th Anniversary Weapons Rumble. All Rights Contra Marriage. So the rules of this match, obviously, like Weapons Rumble, it sounds weird, but very easy to explain. You know, you have a countdown, and at the end of each countdown, another weapon gets to enter the match, just like, you know, people entering in a rumble. Each weapon is used by a specific wrestler, too. So, you know, you had, like, Takagi had, like, I don't remember what the fuck he had other than...
there's a lot of shit.
I think he had like a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire, and then Dino had a dildo wrapped in barbed wire. Dino eventually had like his gay friends, basically. Which I'm not trying to insult. That's really what they are, is gay friends. Takagi had, I think, that macho dance group, which ended up distracting the gay friends and getting them out of there. The best one probably was Kendo Kashin and Momota having a match in the middle of that match as one of the weapons. That was fucking hilarious. Because they had been teasing that Kendo Kashin and Momota were going to have a match at like 6:30 in the morning, but Sumo Hall refused to open, basically, to have the match. So they instead had the match in the middle of this weapon rumble, which is really hilarious. And then, you know, it got thrown out because Dino's gay friends were like molesting the second referee. And then Kashin was like, okay, well, All Japan next week. So apparently it's going to happen at the All Japan Sumo Hall show.
Oh, really? I actually didn't see that.
Yeah, so that's what Kashin claims anyway. But yeah, then obviously we got into the heavy hitters where Dino, like, one of his weapons was an embarrassing footage from a fan event, like, 10 years ago, and it's like Takagi, like, so drunk, he's like stripping. Like, that just if I don't know if they were showing the ring and like cutting back and forth, but like, when you're there, okay, because when you're like, Takagi was so upset by showing this video, like, he kept begging Dino to turn it off. It was really hilarious.
Yeah, that might have been my favorite part of the match. That was, I mean, it's great. It's just, it's great. Yeah, you have his facial expressions, it's like, what the fuck is going on, but it's distracting him, and Dino. I think that's when Kendo Kishin and Momota came in after that.
And that
was a really good spot. I really enjoyed that one. And yeah, then Dino's mom came in, Takagi's wife came in, and she beat the hell out of him. And everything here was really
Dino's mom using a lip lock was hilarious. Like, the crowd went nuts for that. And then Takagi's wife coming in and, like, you know, slapping him and moonsaulting him, that was awesome. And then Dino obviously got the pin after that. So yeah, this was great. It went 17 minutes, but it never felt like it dragged to me. So I enjoyed it a lot, and you know, it was everything you'd expect from this kind of match. And I have to say, dude, the crowd was more into this than anything on the show by a mile. Like, the rest of the show ended up suffering for crowd heat, I think, because the crowd was so into this match and like so burned out after this match was over. But like they were so into this fucking match. Like the crowd was as loud for that match as the crowd was on any show was loud for any match the entire trip. So yeah, but it was an experience, and I'm really happy I went and got to see this live, because you know it was really cool, and I think this was great. It was an example of a very high stakes comedy match that ended up feeling like, you know, you really didn't know who was going to win by the end. You really cared who was going to win, given the stipulation. So as a result of Dino winning, he ended up coming out later on in a blazer and constantly, like, Dino in the blazer with his tights was hilarious. Yeah. It's like corporate Dino is, I think it was Mark on our trip who came up with that, corporate Dino. And that was really funny. And they immediately fired, Amon, the general manager, because they were like, we don't need three figureheads, basically. Because you have Dino as producer, Takagi still as owner, you don't need a third figurehead. So they fired him.
Yeah. I didn't know that guy's name. I think he works backstage a lot, doesn't he? He works. He does a lot backstage.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he does. But yeah, so Dino fired him, and like, well, first Takagi fired him actually, and then Dino agreed with the decision, and he even said in English for us, he's like, "You are fired," and he just kept repeating it, "You are fired," and like we were just cracking the fuck up at that. So this was awesome. Can't say enough good things about it. Even I think if you're not normally into Dino's brand of comedy, there's really nothing like, you know, he wasn't really trying to rape anybody. So I think you could still enjoy this one.
I could attest to that, because you know, and a lot of people know, whoever reads my stuff on the website, my DDT reviews, I'm not a big fan of Dino. His character is that he's a gay guy, but he's extremely horny, and anytime he sees a guy, he has to fuck him. And so that just kind of makes me uncomfortable. I mean,
I honestly think when people would take it that, I get why people find it offensive, but I don't think that's really the point of the character. Like, I think he's just, I think it's more like Goldust. I think he's doing it because.
It might not be the point of the character, and Japanese fans might not take it that way, because obviously they really enjoy it. He's, is it safe to say he's the most over character in the company? I mean, after this, I think you could make that argument for sure.
I mean, and he won the general election last year, so.
Yeah, that's right. And the Ishikawa match in Corrigan had a lot of heat too because of that. So it makes me uncomfortable personally, just because it's like, hey, he's kind of raping that dude, you know?
Yeah, I totally get it. Yeah. There's a lot of queer people I know who don't like the character at all, and I totally get it. I mean, just me personally as a queer person, it doesn't bother me, but if it bothers other people, I totally get it.
Yeah, that's fine. Everyone has their own lines, and that's fine. I would never tell anybody, "Hey, you support rape if you like." No, that's not the point, and I would never do that. But it makes me uncomfortable, and but there wasn't a lot of that here, so I appreciate that. There were some, and but the thing is, it didn't really bother me much here, because Takagi was kind of doing the same thing, and that it was in such a big spot. It was so important that it's not just, you know, Dino being a fucking an idiot in Corkin Hall in the second match on the show. So yeah, it didn't really bother me too much here. I can't say I loved those parts of it, but aside from that, I really did enjoy this. It's probably, if you're looking at it objectively, it is the best match on the show. It was the best match on the show because it drained the crowd afterward. The crowd couldn't get into the next three matches.
They got into the main event by the end, I thought.
It didn't really come across that way. If I had to, we'll get to it when we get to the main event. But
yeah,
if I did have to pick something, it would be the crowd. So I think this was objectively the best match on the show. I didn't give it a rating. I couldn't possibly give it a rating, but I really did enjoy it, and it's something I probably will watch again if I ever need to think, like, if I ever need a reminder of why DDT is so successful and why they do the things they do for their audience, you know, because I get why they do these things. A lot of times I don't enjoy it. If I ever need a reminder of why they do it, I will revisit this match.
Yeah, so after that, we had intermission, and then by the time we came back from intermission, unfortunately, the crowd was very burnt out, and it was, like, I think, like, almost 6 p.m. at this point. So, you know, a lot of people have been there since, like, 1:30. So I get it, yes, you know. Definitely. Even though the crowd, the show didn't officially start till 3, like, you know. Yeah, people did get in there early. So match 7, the DDT Extreme title. This is hair versus hair. Daisuke Sasaki defeating Akito with the chair-assisted La Mystica in the La Mystica cross face lock in 21-14. Like, I thought this match was awesome. Like, I gave this 4.25, and the crowd just never got into it at all. But, you know, I still thought they worked so hard, and they told such a great story that I tried not to hold the lack of crowd heat against it. And, you know, I was very much on pins and needles because I love Sasaki. I did not want him to lose his hair. So I was very happy when he ended up retaining. But, yeah, I thought this was really good.
Yeah, I'm happy to announce that I've turned the corner on Daisuke Sasaki. I enjoy him now. For a while, his matches just they came across as uninspired, and just he has this look, and he still does, even though that I said I enjoy him, he still does look like he just doesn't really give a shit, and that is part of his character, but sometimes it does bother me. Adam Cole has the same problem. He's a good wrestler, and I know he tries, but he just looks lazy, and that was a problem I had with fuck Adam Cole. That was a problem I had with Daisuke Sasaki, and
Has there been a guy? Not sorry, you probably have to say this. Like, has there been a guy who jumped to WWE that like you gave less of a shit about since Adam? That's probably Bobby Roode. But like Adam Cole was like when he jumped, it was like, yeah, whatever. Now I don't have to see you like have your fucking 2.5-star special on my New Japan Corrigans like twice a year anymore. Get the fuck out. Anyway.
I agree. I've turned the corner on Sasaki. I really enjoyed him here. I enjoyed his match with Jun Kasai at Judgment.
That was on my top 10 for a while.
The Kasai match?
Yeah, the Kasai match. The bottom half of my top 10 for a while.
Yeah, I think I liked it the same. I gave it the same rating as I gave the Sakito match. I gave it 3.25, which the crowd really did take it down a little bit. But the work was so good that.
But you mean 3.75?
3.75, yeah.
Okay,
I
thought you said 3.25, which, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I like him now, and I'm going to try to make time to seek out some of his other matches, see if anything's changed. Because honestly, I'm a fair guy, I'll admit. I've watched a lot of his matches, just been like, I don't really care about Sasaki. I'm not going to pay much attention to this, whatever. And even when he's good, I'm just like, okay, he's good, but it's still Sasaki. I really don't care about him. But after this, I think I'm going to make an effort to pay more attention and try to enjoy his matches more, because I did enjoy him here, and I enjoyed the Kasai match. I haven't seen the Togo match. I need to get to that soon. I like Akito,
too. The Togo match was awesome.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people say that was like one of the five best matches.
I mean, I usually fucking hate Iron Man matches, and that was that was still really good.
Case Lowe liked it, and I have very similar taste as Case Lowe. If he liked it, then I'll like it, because it wasn't a very like lucha kind of match, very submission based.
Yeah.
So if Case liked it, I know he hates lucha. He hates that style. So if he liked it, I'll probably enjoy it too. We have very similar taste. I enjoy Akito too. So I thought both were really good here. Sasaki kind of outshined him a little bit. I thought Akito.
Oh, I thought Akito so too.
Akito's selling of the neck was tremendous. Tremendous. Yeah. He every time he would go for him, he would grab that neck. And you know, I'm not a selling guy. I really don't care. But when selling is good, it's good. So I enjoyed the selling here. I really enjoyed both of their performances.
Yeah, I thought this was really good. So I just watched the crowd have been a little less burnt out, but maybe if you'd switch the placement of this and the weapons rumble, I think it could have helped a lot. But
yeah.
All right, so the semi-main, the KOD tag team titles, Hiroshima and Naomichi Marufuji defeating Ire and Higuchi, with Hiroshima pinned Ire with the Samato in 16-14. They failed in V4, so him and Marufuji became the 62nd KOD tag team champions. I thought this was really good. I gave this 4 stars. I thought it was a very good tag team match, a good example of like a dream tag team match where, you know, some guy, 4 singles guys kind of came together. You talked about that in your review, I think.
Yep.
So yeah, I thought they put together a really good match. You know, again, the crowd wasn't quite as hot for it as you would have liked, but you know, it was been a long show, so I tried not to hold it against them. And you know, a very good tag match, and you know, obviously the story continued with Ire getting pinned by Hiroshima. You know, I thought for a second that they were gonna finally give Ire his big win when he kept hitting with those beast bombers and stuff, but you know, Super Hiroshima shrugs it all off and hits the Sumato. I'm not the type of person. They're the type of person that's really annoyed. You know, I saw Milo throw a shit fit on Twitter. God bless Milo, I love you, but he was not happy about Hiroshima beating Ire again. But a few other people were pretty unhappy. But like I still like the story. I think it'll be a big deal when Ire finally beats him. And I don't necessarily think a tag title match here was the right moment. So I think it's exactly. better in a singles match. So I thought this match was really good. I liked the finish. I liked, you know, continuing that story. And yeah, I mean, cool to see Marufuji getting more DDT work for sure too. Because, you know, God bless Noah, but DDT definitely has a higher profile than Noah right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think this was the right place to have Irie beat Hiroshima. I think that does need to be in a singles match or even a tag match. Just this wasn't the tag match. You know, this, for all intents and purposes, this was a match to get Marufuji on Peter Pan. This was a match to have him team with Hiroshima, who is he's still kind of the ace of the promotion. Not really, but kind of.
Well, he's a Tanahashi.
Yeah, he's a Tanahashi. Yeah. Okada might be the ace, like Takeshita might be the ace, but Hiroshima is still Hiroshima, Tanahashi is still Tanahashi.
Yeah, exactly.
And this was really about getting Marufuji to team with him, getting them, you know, popping the crowd with that, just popping the house a little bit, maybe. And
I mean, I'm sure he couldn't have hurt. And that the show drew great. It ended up with 5,900 fans, and, you know, it looked pretty fucking full in the building. So,
yeah. About a year ago, maybe over a year ago now, because it was before the G1 last year, people were really down on Marufuji, really down on him. One of the most overrated wrestlers in Japan, in the world. He was never good, which is bullshit. But I'm all for opinions, but that's bullshit. Come on. And he's not a draw, all that. And he's really proven since the G1 that he is a draw. He sold out Sumo Hall last year with Okada.
He's a draw everywhere but Noah, it seems like.
Yeah, well, actually, if you look at the Noah attendance last year while he was in the G1, it was significantly. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Before and after. Yeah. And but I think just the general state of Noah, that's really what's holding him back. But he definitely did help a little bit here. I feel like that's safe to say. DDT was going to draw a good crowd regardless, but like you said, Marufuji does not hurt. He'll never hurt.
I wouldn't surprise if he added like 300 fans or something, because it seemed like there were a bunch of fans with a Noah banner off to the side at one point, and there were definitely some fans that were there for Marufuji. So, yeah.
I mean, they were here to hear. He's never been in DDT before. He wrestled one match in DDT. So, and it's Tokyo. He's a big star.
Yeah.
Historically. So there's no way there weren't people who saw Marufuji on this card and said, okay, I'm going to go. Not specifically for him, but okay, Marufuji's on the card. I want to see Marufuji too. So
yeah.
That's what this match was about. It was also about Higuchi finally breaking through as not a rookie, not a mid-carder, but a top tier, maybe not top tier, but that second tier headliner. I think they really can put him in a spot like this from now on. He's over. He has a great look, very charismatic.
Yeah, the crowd likes him a lot.
Yeah, like I said before, who was it? It was Saki. DDT takes a long time to push their DNA guys, and understandably so. They're rookies; they have to improve, and they give them a lot of room to improve. But after 4 years, what is it? 4 years, I think. I think it's time that they really do start pushing him. And we saw that they recognize that they have to push him. They recognize that he's a star. They recognize that he can make money. And so I think they are going to put him in positions like this from now on. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him headlining Peter Pan within, I'll put a number on it, 4 years. I think that's a possibility.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I forget his age. I think he's like 28, something like that.
Yeah.
So he's not a kid. He's significantly older than Takeshita is. Yeah. So, you know, they gotta get going. It's now time to start pushing this guy. And I thought he was really good here. I liked his exchanges with Marufuji. Him and Hirashima have really good chemistry as well. And I'm glad that they did have Irie take the pin, because not only does it protect Higuchi, it also does further that Hirashima Irie story, which will probably be off in the next year, 2 years.
I think it'll go at least through the Grand Prix, probably.
And then now it's getting a little long in the tooth. It's been several years of this story. They even headlined Peter Pan a few years ago. So I don't know if they're going to do that again. It would work, but Hirashima's kind of, they've moved him down. He's Tanahashi now. Tanahashi isn't headlining Wrestle Kingdom. Hirashima's not headlining Peter Pan.
Yeah.
After the match,
we had the announcement from Dino coming out in his corp blazer to announce that he's going to really show Marufuji what DDT is all about, because the next tag title defense is going to be Dino and Takagi teaming up to challenge Marufuji and Hirashima in an empty factory match. So they're going to have a match in a factory. And then the funniest part to me is apparently Marufuji basically asking Uchida, whatever the hell that guy's name is, the president of NOAH, you know, is this really okay, basically? And yeah, Uchida, that's his name. And it was basically he was like, no problem. So, because he was at ringside. So that was pretty funny. So yeah, they're going to have a factory match next month for the tag titles. What do you think of that, Dylan?
It's a factory match. I mean, it's an empty factory match. I love empty factory matches. All the great empty factory matches throughout history, I've been a big fan of. So I'm looking forward to it.
Who forgets Dez and Hackenschmidt, the empty factory match?
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan. So I'm looking forward to it, and I think we could see a title change, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's very possible.
The DDT, the audience would like that a lot, but the audience that's not going to be there, but will enjoy that. So that'd work, but I would like to see Hirashima and Marufuji hold these titles until I would say Osaka Octopus, at least. They do like to hot potato these titles around, and yeah.
So then we have the main event, the KOD Openweight title, Konsuke Takeshita defeating Tetsuya Endo with the cross-arm German suplex in 29:02. His seventh title defense. By the end of it, I thought the crowd did get into it. Maybe it didn't come across on TV, but there were a lot of people in my section yelling for Endo. Just, you know, yelling, Endo, Endo. Like, every time he was in trouble, there were a lot of people yelling for Endo. Not nearly as many yelling for Takeshita, although Mort and Taylor, who I was watching it with, were both very into Takeshita. So when Takeshita won, they were sitting there clapping while I just looked very sad. But yeah, I mean, I was rooting hard for Endo. So were a lot of people, I feel like, in attendance. Definitely more than Takeshita. And I don't know if that's any... I've seen people say that shows Takeshita is a failed ace. I don't know if that's true, because people just want to root against the established guy in a match like this. They want to see, you know, the guy who's never won the title win the title. So I don't think that necessarily means Takeshita is a bad ace or anything. But yeah, as far as the match itself, I thought the match itself was awesome. I gave it 4.5. I thought it made my match of the year list towards the low end, but I really liked this match a lot. And you know, one of its best features was it did not feel like it went almost 30 minutes to me live. Like, it felt like, you know, a 20-minute match. So anytime a 30-minute match can feel like a 20-minute match, you know, they've done something right there. You know, they had some pretty crazy spots, especially on the when they went out onto the ramp, and you know, towards the end, where you know, the part that people talked about a lot and debate on Twitter was Endo basically hitting all of his finishers in Takeshita, even his older that like torture rack bomb, and Takeshita kicking out all of them and then pinning him with the cross arm German instead of the surprise rose. But I don't, him pinning him with the cross arm German did not bother me, because I felt that was more like a callback than anything, you know, beating him with this older move, because it was like a callback to the rivalry, the same move he beat him with when Endo ended up turning afterwards to join Damnation. So I did, that didn't really bother me, but like, I get why people would be bothered by Takeshita kicking out of so much and then pinning Endo with that move. But
well, not only was it a callback, I think it was all them going 30 minutes and both being extremely worn out, and both of them doing whatever they had to do to win. Both of them just getting up after every big move, fighting like their lives were on the line, really. And Takeshita not having anything left in him, and knowing that Endo didn't have much left in him either. Just he had to drop him on his head with these German suplexes. That was it. It didn't have to be glorious. It didn't have to be special. It just had to be, I'm going to fucking kill this guy because I can't fight anymore. I've fought all I could fight. That's it. I'm gonna do whatever I have to do. So I really did enjoy that, as well as it being a callback.
So I mean, I thought this match was really awesome, and you know, I wish the crowd had been a little bit up, more up for it after, you know, just a very long show. But I still thought they were into it by the end, and I was, like, super into it, just rooting so hard for Endo there live, and I really wanted to see him win the title. But, you know, I'm sure Endo will get his moment. It just probably, it just won't be with me there, unfortunately. But, you know, I got to see Naito win the G1. I can't have everything, I guess. But, yeah, as far as the match itself goes, again, really, really awesome match. I want to watch it back on tape to see if I could even go higher, but you know, 4.5 live, I thought it was a really, really good match.
Yeah, same here. I actually have quite a bit to say about this. What was Takeshita's entrance? Did that come across as weird live as it did
on tape? It came across pretty weird. Yeah.
It was, I don't know, what was it? I couldn't figure out what it was. I'm sitting there watching, like, is this supposed to be, you know, is this supposed to represent Takeshita? Like, what is this? Does he have any sort of background that would call for this? And I not to my knowledge. So it was just really weird. People were laughing at it. I was laughing at it. It was just really dumb. But I really did like the work in this match. My only problem was the beginning, which I'll talk about in a second, and the crowd. The crowd, you said it came across pretty well live, but on tape, it didn't really come across that way. It came across, as it progressed, it kind of did, but for a little bit, it was just people in this malaise. They were ready for the show to end. They were still into the main event, but it was beyond them to react accordingly to relative to what the main event was supposed to be, and how you would expect the crowd to be. Even if they did come across that way live, like you said. But that was my main issue. My other issue was in the early stages of the match, and I talked about this in my review, it seemed as though they were just figuring out what they wanted to do rather than, I'll compare it to Okada and Omega. Like Okada and Omega, the G1 match, as soon as bell rings, they're at each other. They're trying to get the win as quick as possible because their last match was a draw. And they have a 30-minute time limit. This didn't have a 30-minute time limit, but that same structure, that same formula, both of them attacking each other at the bell, trying to win as fast as possible, trying to do as much damage as quick as they can before they themselves run out of energy individually. I thought that would have worked for their story, and they didn't really do that. They kind of just, it looked like they were trying to figure out what they wanted to do.
I thought that worked. I mean, I liked the whole, like, weird feeling out process thing they had going on. Like, I thought that was cool, the way they just kind of stared at it. It almost is a different way, like, you know, where they stared at each other like, you know, we did all this shit last time, and neither one of us could beat the other one in 60 minutes, so what the fuck do we do now? That's kind of the vibe I got from it.
Well, I agree, but I think they're kind of beyond that sort of thing. They've been friends since 2012. They've known each other for even before wrestling, so I think they're beyond that. They should know each other well enough by now that they shouldn't be grabbing headlocks. That was kind of just my problem. Like, I didn't hate it. I didn't see it. I'm like, oh, come the fuck on. But I saw it and I'm like, that's not really, I wouldn't really be doing that if I went to a draw with this guy and he's my bitter enemy. I wouldn't be grabbing headlocks. So that kind of bothered me. But beyond that, I really enjoyed this. I love that the story they told was that both of them were equal. They're both equal. Takeshita, he's the ace. He's the ace of the promotion. He's 22 years old. Endo, 4 years his elder. And they just know each other because they came up together in wrestling. They came up together in life. And Endo turned on him because he was jealous of him, of Takeshita, winning the title before Endo did. Takeshita beat this guy in every match they had up until, I think, September 2016. The other one was stopped. There was one that was stopped. They had 8 matches. One was stopped. Endo won one of them. And I thought he really did a good job telling the story of, I'm tired of being compared to this guy. I'm tired of him beating me like a drum. I'm tired of being looked at as his friend and not Tetsuya Endo as Tetsuya Endo. Tetsuya Endo as Konosuke Takeshita's friend. And I really like the story that he hung in there with Takeshita. They were equals. They told the story that Endo might just be as good as Takeshita, even though Takeshita is in the top spot and Endo's not. Even though Takeshita has beaten Endo in just about every match that they've had. And I thought the draw, as much as people didn't like it, I know a lot of people thought it was boring. I really liked it. I liked that match a lot. But I know people didn't, and I get why. But I thought that was essential for the story in that what I'm saying right now, that it showed Endo was just as good as Takeshita, even though Takeshita has beaten him all these years. I really like that it showed Endo might be more deserving than Takeshita is. There were a lot of times in this match where it's like, why has Takeshita beaten this guy so much? If this guy is able to hang in there with him like this. And I really enjoyed Endo's performance from that standpoint. His selling, his facials, I enjoyed everything about it. They told a great story in this match. Was it a match of the year contender? I don't think so. You liked it. We gave it the same rating, but I think you liked it more than I did.
Yeah, we gave the same rating, but I think I've given less matches, I guess, more stars than you have, because it's on my top 10.
Yeah, that's a result of me enjoying more New Japan matches and stuff like that. Once you add all that up,
yeah,
I get why. Mean, but I think we liked it about the same. You just had it higher due to me.
I have an eighth on my top 10 of the year. Yeah. So
honestly, I love this match. This is how good wrestling is in 2017. I don't even know if this match would make my top 50 for the year.
That's crazy.
But I really it might. That might be a little ridiculous. It might.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed this match. Both of them were great. I thought both of them really showed that if they're going to be the two guys DDT pushes as the top two guys for the next 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 years, that they are worthy of the spot and that they are deserving of the push they're given because of this match. They showed it in this match. I thought they looked like two experienced pro wrestlers. They looked like total pros, both of them. They looked like I could compare this to Hiroshima and Ibushi. I really think there are a lot of similarities, or Ibushi and Omega, like Drew Wardlaw did. He compared the match to the Ibushi Omega matches, and I think there are a lot of similarities. I think they are worthy of this spot, and I think they are both going to be huge stars. Endo as a babyface, Takeshita probably as a heel, even though the roles are reversed right now. And you can tell here because the crowd was really behind Endo, like you said. His future is clearly as a babyface. But both of them, they're going to be huge stars. I really do believe that, and this was a great start.
Yeah. So this was really awesome, and, eighth on my top 10 list now. It might not last in the top 10 all the way to the end of the year. I guess it depends on how much the rest of the year is great. I mean, it's not my DDT match of the year either. My DDT match of the year is still Hiroshima and Takeshita from March 20th, which I have 6 on my top 10 list. But
yeah, I don't know which one I liked more, actually.
But yeah, so really good main event. Really great show live. You know, it's one of those shows that, like, to me, it's almost like this must be what it feels like to be really into WWE nowadays and go to WrestleMania, because it's like the show is so long, but you don't really care because you're so into everything that, like, you know, even by the end, you know, your ass hurts from sitting there all this time, and it is tiring, but, like, even after you've been there for basically 6 hours, you're just like, wow, this is really cool, and there were so many cool moments I'm going to remember later. Moments! Sorry. And, like, there were so many great matches, and, you know, you don't really feel like you were, you know, like, you don't regret being there for that long. So, you know, it was a very long show, but it was still one of my favorite shows of the entire trip. You know, to me, it's up there with the G1 finals, the Deathmania, something else that I had, and the Stardom Hurricane, I think. Well, those are probably my four favorite shows on the entire trip.
The Stardom Hurricane didn't come across very well on tape. It seems like the
crowd
was... Yeah, I mean, I like Stardom. I've enjoyed them more in recent months than I have really all year. But the main event, Kagetsu and Iwatani, that was really good. But the crowd, it just seems like no one was really there. But I also did watch on Stardom World, so that could be the problem. Because, you know, they only have one or two cameras. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I know. I have to see what it was like on tape. But yeah, live that show was awesome. But it could have just been being front row for Stardom. So, but anyway, as far as Peter Pan goes, again, live, that was one of my favorite shows the entire trip. I thought it was awesome. And I definitely recommend seeing a big DDT show like that live if you have the opportunity. It was so much fun. What was it like? What did you think of the show overall on tape?
I loved it. I liked it. You said it was up there with the New Japan Sumo Hall shows. I got to be honest, I liked it a little bit more than at least the last two nights. The last two nights weren't as good as the first one, I thought.
Oh, I agree with you. The first of the three nights was the best one.
Yeah. The third night was just... actually, you know what? I liked the third night. I liked a few of the matches on that show.
The third night to me was almost... The third night was close to a one-match show, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the junior tag title match. I even liked the tag title match, but a lot of people didn't. And but yeah, this was as a full card, I liked this, and at least the last two nights. The first night, I'd have to go back and look at the card because there's so much wrestling. I forgot what the card was, honestly. I just remember enjoying it. I really did enjoy the show. I gave two matches over 4 stars, and I don't think there was a match of the year contender on the card. And to compare that to the Big Japan Sumo Hall show in July, which I know you liked, and I know other people did, and I reviewed it for the site. Go read it. That wasn't as good, even though a lot of the matches were similar. I had similar ratings for all of the matches. The difference is that show was underwhelming. I expected better matches. This show was everything I expected out of it. Plus, I don't really like DDT, so I didn't have many expectations. But those small expectations that I had, it exceeded those. So that's the difference between the two. Even if the quality of the matches in a vacuum, if you just look at star ratings and stuff like that, they were pretty similar. But this one, it felt more lively. It felt like it had a soul. The Big Japan show felt soulless. This one felt like it had a soul. And I really did enjoy this card. It's the DDT shows ever.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really, really good. I thought I like Judgment better, I think, overall, but both shows are really good this year. Both the big DT big shows.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess we can wrap it up. This was cool. Thanks for coming on again, Dylan. I didn't think I was going to get to talk about this show because I couldn't find anybody to talk about it with me, and then I kept feeling like I was in a coma on top of that coming back from Japan, but I'm glad I got a chance to talk about it. So thank you for coming on and letting me, you know, rave about how much I love this show.
Pleasure. Thank you. If you ever want me back, even with all the technical issues,
Plug your Twitter, by the way, because I don't remember exactly what it is.
DylanJX4. DylanJX4.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. So just for the listeners at home, I know this episode's coming out at kind of a weird day for us, a Friday, but starting next week, we'll be back on our regular schedule of recording either Monday or Tuesday night and releasing either Tuesday or Wednesday. So the next couple episodes are already lined up. Next week, I'm going to be joined by JR Goldberg, who is at Wrestling Bubble on Twitter. And JR and I are going to go deep into our own past to talk about what it was like basically growing up with Ring of Honor. I think we're going to call it Growing Up ROH or something. And, you know, because he and I both went to a lot of Ring of Honor shows back in the day during the glory period of like 2003 to like 2008. So we're going to talk a lot about that, what it was like going to all these Ring of Honor shows, you know, any memories we have of that, and then how our wrestling taste greatly diverged after Ring of Honor, where, you know, I was already into Puro, but I got way more into Puro, and he got very into Lucha, and we'll talk about why we might have gone in very different directions post-Ring of Honor. So that'll be a fun episode. Obviously, if you know what I look like, you can see me in the front row of a lot of Ring of Honor shows, pretty much every Northeast show for like 5 years, basically. So it'd be cool to basically go on and really talk about that on this show for the first time.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. I love Jared. Yeah. He's one of the only guys I can disagree with on just about everything and still really enjoy talking to about wrestling and about everything, really. So I'm looking forward to that.
So that'll be fun. It'll be the first of two straight weeks of an American indie focus, because the following week I'm going to have Michael Spears, my co-host of Open the Voice Gate, on to talk about Chikara and like the peak Chikara years before and why we think it kind of like went down the tubes after that. So that'll be fun. I wasn't as in Chikara as I was in the Ring of Honor, but I did go to like a lot of shows in 2010 and like 2011. So that'll be fun to talk about too. So some American indies, historical American indies, coming up in the next 2 weeks here on Wrestling Omakase. So definitely check that out next week with JR, following week with Mike Spears. And, you know, if you're into American indies, if you're into Ring of Honor and Chikara, that'll be two episodes you'll want to hear. But in the meantime, that'll do it for this week. We'll see you again back in our normal day on Wednesday next week. See you next time.
See ya.
Here it comes again, lunch. Will it be the same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.